Warning, Star Trek From the Holodeck contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
Lock it alone!
Fire.
Holodeck 3 program is reinstated.
Open sesame!
Commander Klingon vessel. We are energizing transporter beam. Now.
Hello, welcome everyone. This is Star Trek From the Holodeck. If you are a new listener, please find us wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search From the Holodeck. Leave us a review. Give us a thumbs up. We need it. Please don't give us a thumbs down. And don't give us one star. Come on, we're better than that. Even if you disagree with some of the things we say, is that a reason to hate us? You know, we put a lot of work into our discussions. We break things down. We attempt to analyze in the way that we can and know how to. Right, Dave?
We try to actually hold a logical debate.
What? Look at you. Look at you. Yeah, that was... David, that's one of the reasons why I did enjoy this episode, just jumping the gun, is the inclusion of debate and teaching the Starfleet cadets about the importance of non-emotional debate.
Yes.
That is great.
Oh, that is what, to me, really makes Star Trek special. Like, when you have episodes... Now, I'm not saying that this is one of the greatest debate episodes of Star Trek. Star Trek has had... So many in its history, especially if you just were to take TNG into question, that's their bread and butter. When you give Patrick Stewart time to pontificate and literally, I still say it still gives me chills seeing that episode when he is debating with Starfleet about Data, about if Data is a life form. Those are the moments that are so special because that's what Star Trek's supposed to do. It's not supposed to, like, be yelling at you, this is how you think. It's supposed to make you think. It's supposed to let you come up with your side. What side do you want in the debate? Maybe you find out, oh, I'm actually part of the other side instead of the one side.
Yeah. Star Trek has always used classic debate form, but also they utilize what philosophers call the Socratic method. You know, where questions are posed. That's something that Star Trek has always done very well. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say this is the best debate style episode in Star Trek's 60-year history. It's not, but it is one of the strongest episodes in the Kurtzman era of the last decade or so. Absolutely. All right. So today, episode 4 is what we are going to be breaking down. The synapses, Jaden faces an existential crisis that threatens his species while also confronting his past. Now, this episode, we have a lot to sort through. David, I've been thinking about this episode for several days now. I've rewatched it twice. Or I should say I've watched it twice. And each time I watch, I pick up something different. And then I quickly added it to our notes, David, to talk about. Because there are a lot of layers to this episode. And that's why I feel like ultimately this episode is... not only decently written, but it is a strong Kurtzman era installment of Star Trek, without a doubt. Now, we have a lot of different things we're going to get into, a few talking points. But before, I want to set up a bit of a preview so people know, listeners know, David, what we're going to get into and talk about. So the first thing we're going to be talking about are the strong themes of introspection and this notion that life is a continual process of evolutionary change. The idea that we use our past not as emotional resonance to conserve it, but rather as a means to better ourselves, which is a very strong statement specifically for Star Trek. And what Captain Aki was talking about, you know, she's talking about essentially about existentialism as a philosophical way of life. Also, we learn about the Klingons and the current state of their culture, their failings. Yes, David, failings. And we will get into that because that is largely connected to the main theme of introspection. And also, through all of this, we learn about Jaden and his past, which is very important, specifically for the series itself, all of which we absolutely needed. We've been talking about starting to flesh out those characters. And interestingly and cleverly, the writers use the act of student debate, as we had said a moment ago, to express and flesh out many of these ideas. That was really the foundation. The plot, you know, the initial plot, the stagings of the debate is what then allowed the rest of the episode to come about. That's how you write television. You use one layer to help with the next, and then the next, and then the next. Everything feeds into itself nicely. So this is by far, in my opinion, I'll just say it, this is probably the best written episode of Starfleet Academy so far.
Well, not even it's the best, but I honestly make the argument up to this point, this is probably the most fan favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, for us Star Trek fans, this is what Star Trek really is meant for. It goes back to like what I said in one of the past shows, where Star Trek in general is an educational program. That's how it started. It was supposed to be kind of like Roddenberry's way of getting to teach a younger audience, hey, these are the things that we need to know about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the liberal ideals that he was trying to put forward in the 1960s.
Yeah, it was a product of the civil rights era.
Exactly. And then, like, now today, they take a page from his book, mm-hmm. and put a debate episode together that I think really does make up for, like, what people have been saying. Oh, Star Trek doesn't feel like Star Trek anymore.
You mean modern Star Trek?
Yeah, modern Star Trek.
Yeah.
This episode right here feels like an old classic Star Trek, where you're basically stuck in the middle, and essentially Star Trek treats this type of, I guess you could call it a moral choices or moral dilemmas, mm-hmm. in a centrist point of view, meaning like it's neither left nor right. It just gives you the argument and expects us to all basically be able to talk rationally out, not emotionally.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I got so freaking giddy when the doctor literally tells them, like, punishes them for actually telling them, in debate, you don't debate with emotion.
Yeah, what did he say? Something about emotions for amateurs?
Emotions for amateurs, yeah, yes. And I was like going, yep, oh my God, this is why I love that character.
Yep.
And like, this is what Star Trek is supposed to teach us. It's like, you're not supposed to be yelling emotionally. You're supposed to be being able to talk and be a diplomat.
I don't like the word teaching necessarily. I get what you're saying, and I agree. I broadly agree. I just don't like saying that because I don't want it to sound like it's social engineering. It's simply showing you,
yeah,
a reasonable way to view life. A reasonable way to live. A reasonable way to live your best life. That's what philosophy largely does as well.
Yeah.
So Star Trek being a philosophical tool in a lot of ways, it just works, you mm-hmm. know? And the strategy behind the episode script is the best thing about the episode. It moves the plot forward. It aids in fleshing out much needed character development, fleshes Trek cosmology as well, fleshes out Trek cosmology, meaning the status of the Klingon Empire, while also connecting all of this to the importance of rational thought and anti-interventionalist policies, you know, even so-called righteous interventionalism. So this notion that each culture has the right to determine what's best for themselves, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's dig in to topic number one. The reason why this episode resonated with me in a lot of different ways, because most of the narrative strength is derived from existentialism or existentialist thought. For example, when Captain Aki, during the teaser, the opening moments of the episode, says, "The paths each of you have taken, all of your life experiences, the decisions you've made that have led you to be right here, right now. Ask yourselves, how will I keep evolving? How will we all, as our journey continues? So this is about introspection and acceptance. Accepting our past as a type of strategic steps for improvement, and that you can't have improvement without embracing our experiences by which we learn from.
Yeah.
You know, to look back, as I mentioned in our last discussion, that's something that's always been built into the DNA of Star Trek, the process or the act of looking back. And interestingly, this is closely aligned, and this is why I really love it, with Nietzsche's thoughts on human progress and the Übermensch, which I believe most people have heard of, or what we English speakers call the Overman, or sometimes the Superman. But the idea is that man is a rope, essentially, fastened between animal and the Übermensch. A rope over an abyss, essentially. So what that's saying is it's characterizing humanity as essentially becoming. We are suspended between what it was and what it might overcome.
Yes.
So, for example, humans are not the final stage of what humanity will be. That sounds a lot like Star Trek. So Star Trek's view is this idea that humanity is nothing but progress.
Mm-hmm.
The progress towards utopia. But there is no end to that progress. Life is always reaching and striving to better yourself. And the way you do that is to remember the past, not because of nostalgic purposes, but because those very experiences, those steps are needed to understand where we are and where we are heading. And that progress is continual.
A lot of people call that the absurdity of life. That's a term that I've always seen in like philosophy circles that I frequent when they talk about existentialism, that concept that you're talking about is like the absurdity of life, where life is what defines us. It's not something that we should look back on, just like we said, nostalgically, but it's something that basically we need to learn from, is because those moments make us who we are in the present.
Yeah. The death of the person and the death of culture is idleness. That's the point.
Mm-hmm.
Always looking to conserve something from the past is looking back in the wrong way. That's not looking back. That's wanting to stay in the past. And life cannot progress by continually trying to hold on to what was formerly true at one point. And that means ourselves. We are not the same people we were 5 years ago, 6 years ago. So this entire thought, you know, you're essentially characterizing humanity as becoming. It's always in motion. And in a lot of ways, the entire story world of Star Trek, Dave, has been an allegory for such a concept. So life should be regarded as a series of improvements, essentially, is what the episode was saying, that has no end point. There is no teleology, necessarily. There is no end goal other than continual progress.
Mm-hmm.
That's a powerful statement. That's an existentialist statement. That's a Star Trek statement. It very much coheres to what we know of the IP over the last 60 years. Then we have Jaden, who refuses to be placed into a box of tradition and instead seeks a different way, a way to survive. And that's another strong component that just simply strengthens the overall theme of this episode. And this is important, Dave, because he clearly implied that what's killing his people, the Klingons, is their refusal to adapt. He didn't say those words.
Yeah.
But he said, I believe, their refusal to accept help or accept anything. And he understood ideologically why. Their culture was born in myth. So even though he could reflect and understand that the position that his people are in right now are largely brought on by themselves,
mm-hmm,
they are an example of a culture that has not evolved. They're still stuck in their warrior their warrior type of society to their own detriment.
Yes.
Whereas Jaden is the example of progressing and taking that next step towards being something other than what you have been for countless centuries. So then you have this idea. Well, okay, Kuonos was born in myth. This is the rational thought, the internal subtext debate of the episode, where two things can be true at once. Okay, we understand why the Klingon culture may be falling apart and going extinct, but also we also understand that culture and beliefs are important.
Yes.
And they should be allowed to make their own decisions.
Exactly. And that's what I thought was the most powerful thing in the very end, is because, like, while it seems the solution that the Starfleet Academy crew came up with may sound absurd, especially when you think of how they tricked they coerced the Klingons into taking the planet.
Yeah.
It seems absurd, but in a lot of ways,
we've seen that before though.
We've seen that before, but when you take a step back philosophically, it makes complete sense because it doesn't, it's not there to make fun of the Klingons, but it's there to actually show people that concept that you're talking about.
Idleness.
Like idleness. Idleness will basically be the detriment to a society and will cause a society to de-evolve.
Yeah.
And while I know that a lot of Star Trek fans have this romantic new notion that the Klingons are these warrior races, they're like the Vikings, they're the samurai of the space. That type of mentality does not make for a evolving culture.
Yeah. In fact, if people have been paying attention to Star Trek, they have pretty much floated these ideas for a very long time pertaining to the Klingon Empire and their unwillingness to adapt and change.
And basically the thing I would tell people is, like, it's really nice and romantic to think that the Klingons are this warrior race of honor and you know, a warrior code, like a Bushido code. Guess what? Samurais don't exist in today's world. Vikings don't live in today's world. Why? Because they couldn't adapt.
I would use Sparta as a better.
Exactly. Sparta, they don't exist anymore. Why? Yeah. Because they didn't adapt.
That's exactly why they disappeared, is because they didn't adapt. That literally is in the history book.
They only now, you know, samurai, Vikings, Spartans, they only live in our myths. They only live in our minds. And for those people that basically have that romantic notion, I get it. It's nice to think about, like, the Klingons this way. But when you take a step back and you actually think about it, it's not a way of a culture to live.
No, the Klingons have always been a story of a warning.
A warning. Yeah.
I mean, look at all the stories we had with Worf and how he faced the decadence of the Empire, their lies, to where he even chose to take on shame and dishonor in order to save the Empire.
Yes.
They've always had these episodes that the Klingons have never been the culture in Star Trek that they use as an example of how things should be. Mm-hmm. It's quite the opposite. So even in terms of canon, Dave, let's look at canon to back up some of the things that they did in Starfleet Academy. The Klingons have been dying since Star Trek, The Undiscovered Country.
Yes.
They were on the brink of self-destruction, you know, through factional clan warfare in Discovery.
Yes.
And looking at DS9, I believe there were numerous episodes that allude to Gowron's desperate attempt to use the Dominion War as a means to bring back the Klingon greatness. Mm-hmm. There has been allusions and explicit commentary on the Klingon decline for years. And there was an episode in Deep Space Nine, the title of the episode eludes me, where there was an actual Klingon that was discussing this with Jadzia Dax about how the Klingons have lost their way. Too many, I believe, and I'm paraphrasing here, he said too many were consumed with being warriors and forgetting that we were once proud poets as well. Yep. We were so much more than just this warrior class. So the Klingons' plight in Starfleet Academy not only works with themes of the episode itself, you know, the need for introspection, to evolve. It goes perfectly with everything we know about Klingons from other series and movies across the decades.
Yeah, and that's the sad part to me, is kind of like this point that we're making is the one thing that hurts my soul the most when I see supposed Star Trek fans actually complaining about how they're portraying Klingons here.
Oh, were people actually complaining about this?
Yeah. There were people that were angry, saying, "Oh, how can they do this to Klingons?" And I'm like, going, "Have you been watching the series up to this point?"
it's kind of inevitable. Like, this made perfect sense to me.
This has been going on for a while, but I get it. A lot of Star Trek fans might be blinded because all they see, and as funny as it sounds, you bring up like the story points from DS9.
I just used three different Star Trek installments to prove that this is actually on par with everything we know.
The fact that basically people are blinded by this and don't see it kind of proves Gowron right. Where Gowron wanted, you know, like in DS9, he wanted the conflict because if we breed conflict, that will bring glory and honor to the Empire and unite the clans. That was his idea. And in some ways it worked, because like it proved that there are people out there that are that narrow-minded, much like in the real world, where basically people are that narrow-minded, where they go, "Oh yeah, this is a great life." And it's like, you do realize that your planet is dead, and essentially, you guys are scattered to the winds. The Empire does not exist anymore. It exists only in your mind. And it really makes me feel like Worf at the end of Picard in season 3, where Worf is just like so tired that he just falls asleep randomly. And I'm like, going, yeah, I get Worf's stress about his life now, that he just wants to sleep, because it's that notion that basically trying to be this warrior honorable race forever is impossible. It is absurd. And if you're going to actually think that absurd, your solutions to issues are going to be absurd.
Yeah. So I looked up the episode that I was talking about from Deep Space Nine. I wanted to make sure I was not lying. So I believe it's the episode titled Blood Oath, where Jadzia reconnects with three legendary Klingon warriors, Kor, Koloth, and Kang.
Kang, yeah.
Men she knew in a previous Dax host. And let's see here. Kor explicitly, I think it was Kor, explicitly contrasts the older Klingon ideal, which was poetry, song, history, ritual, memory, with the present Klingon obsession, which was honor reduced to perpetual combat.
Yes.
Is what he essentially said. Klingons did not begin as brutes, was the quote. They became them. So this isn't a new concept. This is just furthering that overarching story in relation to the Klingons.
And honestly, that in itself, when you take into that core cultural concept of the Klingons, honestly, that's why when I left this episode, Jaden's like turned into my favorite character, because like,
really,
he, think about it, Mike. Jaden is the one thing that Star Trek always does well is the quote unquote child between two worlds.
Agreed.
Right?
Yeah.
And
the dualism. Yeah.
Jaden is basically stuck between two worlds.
Yes.
He has to abide by his Klingon heritage, which he honors.
He honors it. I wouldn't say abide by it. He understands it.
Yeah. But it's not something he wants to do. So he's going to go to Starfleet and basically, like,
he wants to be something else.
He wants to be something else.
Be an example for his people.
I think that's
about
why,
change and progress, right? But that doesn't mean he has disrespect for his culture. He simply wants to be the one to show them that there's another way.
Yeah. And that's why I think the scene with his brother was actually really powerful, where it's like,
yeah,
his brother totally understands him.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like he wants to look at Jaden and say, no, you need to go ahead, follow your dreams, that type of scenario, right? But also on the flip side is his father, who is straightly Klingon, and you know, the relationship between him isn't quote unquote bad, but it's two opposing sides that basically can't coexist.
Yeah.
And that's what made that character really relatable, I feel, for a lot of people, because Jaden feels real. Like, he feels like a child between two worlds.
How many of us at times in our life have felt split between perhaps, let's say, our family values, let's say, how we were raised, and the person we want to be?
Exactly.
You know, stepping out of the shadow of what our family wants us to be and be what we think we should be. Or who we want to be, or who we are, in fact. So I do agree with you. It's a very relatable story. And I also agree with you wholeheartedly that this is the strength of the episode as well, is the idea of being a child of two worlds. That is built into the DNA of Star Trek, the idea of being split ideologically. And yeah, I mean, and in terms of identity or subjectivity as well. So it's good stuff. So yeah, David, all of this works, and using, once again, real world history. You know, I've always pointed to the Spartans as a real world
parallel
to the Klingons. You know, Sparta, at least according to many historians and scholars, they believe Sparta didn't fall because it was too martial in itself. It fell because it froze its values around a single ideal and mistook rigidity for virtue, and they went extinct because of it, while the rest of Greece was progressing.
Yes.
As the Athenians were learning and developing new ideas and modes of life and democracy, the Spartans were still doing the same fucking thing.
Yeah. And look at the parallel of that compared to what they were trying to say in this episode with the Klingons and the Federation.
Well, in a lot of ways, the Federation are the Athenians.
Yeah. The Federation is trying to progress. They're trying to rebuild out of the burn and try to create something. The Klingons are just sitting there twiddling their thumbs, you know, pontificating about honor and glory. And it's like, okay, we know that you want to, this is how you guys think. We respect that. But there's no progress. You're just sitting there pontificating and pounding your chest all this time.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, this is why I really like the episode. I know I keep saying that, David, but that's what worked for me. Just, it was a strategically written episode. See, that's the thing that I was really drawn to. Now, there are some holes in the story. There are some assumptions that some people are taking as errors.
Yeah.
Because there are, in terms of writing, at times, certain moments when you're looking at a linear narrative, oftentimes there are assumptions that producers allow in order to keep the plot moving at a reasonable pace. So sometimes the audience may not be subjected to something explicitly, but the assumptions are there. We understand how they went from A to B to C.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they could have clarified a few things, but overall the episode did work because of its strategy, you know, using Jaden as a way to emphasize the need to evolve in order to survive. And that cultural idleness is in fact a death sentence.
Exactly.
Now, the debate situation was not just great to learn about our characters and the diegetic history, but also to emphasize the power of rational debate, as you had mentioned at the top of the show, which, you know, standard diplomatic debates combined with Socratic method has been a staple in Star Trek narratives forever. Okay, so a few miscellaneous things that I feel like we do need to get into. I did see these complaints pop up on the internet, and I wasn't surprised I would be lying to say I was surprised about this. There were complaints about the Triad House. People claiming it was woke, you know, but you guys got to remember that this actually works with the story they're telling. When you have a culture on the brink of extinction, I believe they said there were 8 remaining houses. Is that correct?
Yes.
Arrangements that recognize 2 or more fathers for 1 mother almost always emerge as an adaptive response to population stress, meaning a decline in population.
Yeah, you see a lot of that, like those polyamorous relationships in cultures like that that are slowly dying.
Yeah.
Because like,
it's very common. Just read a fucking history book.
Because populations fade. And unfortunately, usually just by some strange coinky dink, females tend to get outnumbered by males. So unfortunately, that's how it goes.
Yeah. There's other sociological reasons why these things happen, but for the most part, it has a lot to do with population decline, ecological pressure, land scarcity, social instability. It's not something that should be deemed as necessarily decadence, which is, I think a lot of people just went the sexual route. Oh, look, it's gay. It's gay. It's gay. You know, and then claiming it's a type of decadence phase that the Klingons are going through. They're survival strategies.
Yeah, there's survival strategies in this, folks. And that's why I like crack up when people are like saying some negativity about this. It goes back to like the people complaining about the interspecies relationships that we're seeing in Strange New World, or not Strange New Worlds, but Starfleet Academy currently.
Yeah.
That is evolution. When you actually bring multiple races together, you get interspecies relationships.
Yeah. I mean, that's just how.
Here's the problem with the Klingons. They're so stuck in their old ways, they're late to the party. that's the issue that happens to the Klingons with their way of life. When you're built on a society that is majority isolationist due to honor and warrior code and tradition, you're going to run into these problems that you and me are talking about when it comes to a population.
Yeah.
Numbers will decline, and the only way you can survive is interspecies relationships.
Yeah, it makes sense. And also, if you do want to talk about something, like let's say for the sake of argument, that this is a social statement, that this is a progressive thought, let's say. Well, okay, like I said during episode 2, as long as you don't create illogical things within your plot and your overall narrative in order to push forward a overly progressive thought, then I don't have a problem with it. So like, let's say that was their agenda. Let's say, well, if you're going to do it, this is how you do it. It makes sense.
Makes sense.
It works with what we've seen in the past. It makes sense historically. So I ultimately thought it was a pretty cool thing to do.
Well, it goes into
the Klingons, in my opinion, have been very boring for many years. Mm-hmm. This might be an interesting way. Their decline might be an interesting way to make them interesting again.
It goes into the point that you made in the last episode that we had about the Jem'Hadar. Mm-hmm. The Jem'Hadar had to literally evolve, and in a short amount of time, because they had to. If they didn't, they would become extinct.
Yeah, well, we're assuming that they did evolve, right?
Because
we don't know yet, but that would make sense.
That would make sense.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's why we get like a character like Laura Thok.
Yeah.
Where you see that progress, and that is what has to happen if a species is supposed to survive.
Yeah, and that's the good thing about this script is they had a lot to say, and it was very tidy because everything worked. Mm-hmm. The theme itself was stated subtextually and overtly at times. And then every other element within the narrative worked in tandem with that theme. This is how you write an episode of television. It's very well done. We also, David, just sheerly as a Star Trek nerd here, they finally brought back the Klingon theme.
Did you get giddy when they
yes, that played? I got hard, David. I was so fucking stoked because I could be wrong. Star Trek fans out there, listeners, if you know, let me know. But I believe the last time we actually heard the Klingon theme is when Worf was fighting the Borg.
Yes.
In Star Trek First Contact in the Defiant.
I think that was the I honestly think that that is the last time.
And I always wondered, like, why don't we use this song more often? Deep Space Nine had so many opportunities, never used it.
Oh, Discovery should have used it.
It could be a licensing thing. Oftentimes, because that soundtrack, I believe, or that theme song originated from a movie, and composers don't fuck around with their paychecks.
Oh, no, that's true.
So it could be a licensing thing. Like, every time they use it, they have to pay out the nose. So perhaps that's the reason why they pulled back. But whatever the reason is, I am very grateful that they brought it back in a moment that made it really work. It yes. helped everything punch through that much more.
Oh, yeah. And it was well-timed, too, because I think that the whole time we're getting this element about showing the absurdity of Klingon way of life, essentially. And you get to the theme, it kind of solidifies the fact that we're not supposed to actually look down at the Klingons. We're supposed to understand them. Because once I heard the theme, I'm like, okay, they get it. Now this is why I love the Klingons. This is why we have these rose-colored glasses. This is why we enjoy these characters, the Klingon, any Klingon character that shows up, we all get giddy back in TNG days, even DS9. And at that point, the episode didn't, I was worried that the episode would be saying, oh, those Klingons, look, this is what happens, and put them in a bad light. But no, by doing that in the very end, it brings it full circle so that we can understand.
Yeah, I don't think they were like maligning the Klingons. I'm saying that this is a show that's philosophical. It's sociological. It's teaching people how to think, how to
be empathic.
Right. And they're simply using the Klingons as I said, as a warning.
Yes.
That this is what happens when a culture remains idle. So I don't feel like they were maligning the Klingons or making them look bad. If that's what people are saying, I think mm-hmm. that's a little silly. I think the larger point is very clear that they need a change. And I think that that's why Jaden is that much more important now in this show, because he's the Klingon now that's leading the charge in change while also understanding and respecting his cultural heritage. That's the point there. And also, David, the comments made during the debate, which I agree with wholeheartedly, David, I know you and I both, were infused with strong anti-paternalistic logic. How many times have I said, I know you're an ally, but please don't fucking speak for me.
Exactly.
I'm not a poor little insignificant victim Mexican boy that can't speak for himself. Don't fucking generalize. Don't put me in a fucking box. Mm-hmm. Let me speak for myself. I'm not saying you can't have opinions. Have opinions. But don't put words in my mouth. Don't put a big old victim across my forehead. I don't like that.
That's why I liked the moments in debate that the crew had. Because
you remember they were trying to handle him with kid gloves.
Yeah.
And handled even the Klingon debate with kid gloves. And what did Jaden say? Essentially, he rebuked that.
Yes. Amen. And I was like going, yeah, don't speak for him.
Yeah.
It's cool that you guys are actually trying to assist him with the debate and everything else. But guess what? Guess what happens when you do that? You make something personal. And that's why I loved it when the EMH, the doctor, comes in and reprimands the crew when they were debating and say,
they're not a crew, David.
They're academy kids. But he reprimands them and tells them, you guys are here debating.
Yeah.
You do not make it personal. When you guys generalize something and try to actually instill your own ideals onto someone else, you're personalizing him. That's why don't do that.
Yeah, you just got to listen, right? I think that's one point made as well.
Yeah.
I do like, I would say 98% of what was included in this episode in the way of social commentary. This is good social commentary. This is the proper way to do that OG Star Trek commentary that many of us are used to. Also, David, aesthetically, I know I was criticizing the USS Athena, but after this episode, I might be on board.
Are you on board with
it? Dude, the way the saucer disconnects is pretty cool.
I'm sorry, Mike.
That was pretty cool.
I told you the USS Athena looks like a really good ship.
Yeah, I was pretty stoked when I saw how the saucer, it doesn't separate like Enterprise D.
Yeah.
It just like disengages from the top.
From the top.
Yeah, and that's awesome.
I'm like going, it is the perfect vessel to be a campus. That's what Athena is supposed to be. It's supposed to be kind of like a college campus type of ship.
Okay, David. So overall, episode is strong. There's really not much more to go over. If I miss something, let me know. I think that's the gist of it. When you have a tidy episode like this, it takes a lot less time to go through because everything's clear.
But that's the thing, though. It made the episode go by really fast. And honestly, you could tell that really good Star Trek episodes go by fast like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I go back to like TNG when they get into their debate episodes. Those feel like short 30-minute bursts of a debate. But in actuality, when you go back and watch them, they're pretty hefty.
Yeah. So, David, I'm going to give this episode, are you ready?
Okay.
A 90%.
Interesting. Okay.
What about you?
I'm sitting at an 88 on this episode. Just because it's a really good uptick from the last episode, where the last episode was a definite improvement from the second episode.
Yeah, can we just not talk about the second episode?
But it goes back to like what I was saying is why I told you off air a little bit was like, I really feel that episode 4 should have been sooner because Starfleet Academy would have been actually probably not dealing with as many negativity.
As much negativity
if they started with a very strong episode like this.
You know what, David? If we lived in rational times, I would agree with you. But right now, everyone's is very angry. Everyone's ready to hate on anything. I don't know. Fandom has been infiltrated by a lot of pretenders as well. That is factual.
That is factual, yes.
You know, there's a lot of so-called influencers and YouTubers and TikTokers who have found wealth and just hating on everything because that algorithm is triggered through emotion.
It brings in money.
Negativity. Yeah. So it's kind of even hard to even go to criticism and take it seriously. In fact, the worst thing about this era we're living in currently, and I talked a little bit about this in our Patreon episode, is that all of this behavior online is hurting real criticism.
Yeah.
Because people no longer trust. Fans can't trust real criticism because they think criticism is what they are seeing on social media.
Yeah.
And fair criticism doesn't exist any longer. It really doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
You know, I wrote something recently and someone didn't know what it was. Like, what is this? I'm like, oh, well.
No, thank you.
Is this your notes to your episode coming up? I'm like, no, this is called a review, bro. I thought a review is when you yell at the camera for 5 minutes.
And then something inside you died.
I'm lying. That conversation didn't happen, but I wanted to make that point.
But no, it's true though. It is very true.
It is true. Yeah. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of our show. Be sure to find us on iTunes, Spotify, leave us reviews, share the show, give us a thumbs up. Also, if you want more Star Trek discussions from us, head over to patreon.com/rainmandigital. We do a weekly, during our regular discussions, we do a weekly, we call it Unimatrix Zero. It's basically a pre-show to our full episodic discussions. And we just get into things a little more casually.
It's where we're drinking a lot of blood wine.
Yeah, we get more angry at times on those shows. There's no rules really to those episodes. So yes, please do so. It helps us stay alive and justifies my very existence. It validates me.
Wow. Existentialism right there.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, David.
Thank you. Live long and prosper.
I couldn't help but notice your pain.
My pain.
It runs deep. Share it with me.
End simulation.